ببخشید خودمون. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has launched fresh missile and drone strikes on the positions of anti-Iran terrorist organizations based in northern Iraq. A Palestinian teenager succumbs to his injuries hours after he was shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. And at least 46 people are killed and hundreds of others injured in an earthquake that rattled Indonesia's island of Java. Hello and welcome your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has once again conducted drone and missile strikes against bases of terrorists in Iraq's northern Kurdistan region. The IRGC says that the strikes targeted the remaining positions of the separatist groups operating against the Islamic Republic. The force says that the attacks hit three different locations where the terrorists were holed up and caused serious damage. The IRGC has so far carried out three rounds of airstrikes on terrorist hideouts in northern Iraq over the past weeks. The force says that this is a response to their operations against Iran. Tehran says it opted for the strikes after the Kurdistan regional government failed to take appropriate measures against the terrorists. We're joined by Masoud Shajari from the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us live from London. Mr. Shajari, can you tell us why the IRGC has decided to carry out these attacks in the autonomous Kurdistan region? What was that region, the regional officials, supposed to do that they failed to do, which prompted these attacks?
Well, what seems to be very clear, and the evidence that we are seeing, Iran is facing military intervention and activities on the basis of terrorist processes. And we have seen it in the last month. We have seen number of these armed attack against Iran, against ordinary civilians in the places of religious centers and other areas. And all this is being coordinated from the Kurdistan region. And this is very obvious and very clear. And it's not just these Kurdish separatists, but they are being supported by the US and by other enemies of the Islamic Republic. And the Kurdistan region has become one of the main bases of this type of operation. And we saw even evidence in past of assassination of scientists and so forth, again, being organized, coordinated, and implemented through this region. So Iran has been asking over and over from Kurdistan government to make sure that their territory is not going to be used in this way, which is unlawful and against international law. But for whatever reason, be it the fact that they're not willing or they're not capable, we are not seeing action. And indeed, now the Iran seem to have realized that the only way forward is to take actions themselves and stop this insurgent and training bases and center for coordinating acts of terrorism within borders of Iran.
Thank you very much, Masoud Shajari from the Islamic Human Rights Commission. The Iranian president says that the United States, France, and several other European countries are blatantly supporting terrorists and rioters. Ebrahim Raisi warned that their backing for terrorists will definitely not be in their interests. The president said that Iran's enemies have resorted to a combined war to disrupt the country's progress by targeting its security, economy, and production. He instructed the Iranian foreign ministry to adopt the necessary measures through diplomatic and legal channels to thwart and counter acts of sedition orchestrated outside the country. He also touched upon anti-Iran propaganda campaign by foreign media using fake news and false narratives related to the recent events in Iran. The president urged domestic media and relevant bodies to disseminate information precisely, transparently, and promptly. Tehran says a series of initial measures have been taken in response to the recent anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The foreign ministry spokesman says the details of the steps will be announced by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Nasser Kanani says the West's support for the recent anti-Iran resolution by the IAEA shows that they have a will to hinder technical cooperation between Tehran and the UN agency. According to Kanani, Western countries were expected to avoid such politically motivated measures, considering Iran's positive and constructive cooperation with the IAEA. The resolution adopted on Thursday calls on Tehran to fully cooperate with the agency's probe into uranium traces at three alleged undeclared sites in Iran. Tehran says that the IAEA is basing its statements on information fabricated by Israel. And 2 years ago, Joe Biden came to office with promises of returning to the JCPOA. Halfway into his term, his policy on Iran has been seemingly the complete opposite. Roman Mazahari reports from Chicago.
In the 2020 presidential election campaign, Joe Biden made a full return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program, a key plank of his foreign policy promises. After 2 years in office, his report card on keeping that promise can only be given a failing grade. Not only has Biden not returned to the JCPOA, but he has constantly levied new sanctions on Iran and seems to have fully retained the maximum pressure policy of his predecessor.
For 2 years now, Biden and, you know, his team of foreign policy ghouls like Tony Blinken have refused to lift the illegal sanctions dating back to the Trump era. Trump illegally withdrew from the JCPOA, and they're refusing to lift those sanctions, which has made any negotiations with Iran impossible.
Biden had benefited from total control over Congress, but the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the recent midterm elections. Low turnout and disillusionment with many unkept promises are often being cited as the main reasons for the Democrats' defeat. Last month, a top poll on foreign policy found that a whopping 79% of Americans want the United States to continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question was there such massive support. With Congress now divided and more conservative, most analysts say that even if Biden did genuinely pursue diplomacy, Congress would easily block the deal under the so-called Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act.
You know, the ball has been in the U.S.'s court for 2 years, and, you know, I can see no reason to believe that Biden or the U.S. is committed to the agreement or negotiating in good faith. All they've done is ask for more concessions from Iran. And actually, more recently, they seem a lot more interested in trying to destabilize the country by meddling in its affairs, its sovereign affairs, of course, referring to the recent protests.
With their recent accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran has significantly expanded their diplomatic cooperation with their non-Western allies. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the flashpoint city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the victim, identified as Mahmoud al-Saadi, succumbed to his injuries hours after being shot by the Israeli regime troopers. The shooting took place during a raid on a neighborhood in Jenin. Israeli forces also injured four Palestinians and arrested a number of others. The regime has recently intensified a deadly crackdown in the occupied West Bank. More than 140 people have been killed in the area so far this year. To discuss that further, we're joined by Muti Abu Mohsen, Palestinian political activist who is joining us live from Gaza. Mr. Abu Mohsen, if you could please elaborate on the number of Palestinians that have been killed. It is a staggering 140. Israel has very clearly intensified its attacks against Palestinians. Why is it so?
Yes, first of all, thanks for having me. I think it's worth mentioning that the Israeli occupation forces, since the beginning of this year, 2022, have killed more than 200 or around 200 Palestinians so far, which actually marks the highest number since 2018 so far. And as the whole world yesterday marked the International Children's Day, it's noteworthy to mention that the Israel, since the beginning also of this year, 2022, also slaughtered in cold blood more than 45 Palestinian children, in addition to the detention of 770 Palestinian children as well. So we are talking about continuous crimes committed against the Palestinian people day and night, left, right, and center, amid the abhorrent silence of the international community. And putting this in the context of the latest development regarding the results of the Israeli elections, this means that we are witnessing an incremental change and transform of the Israeli community as a whole at the level of the government and at the level of the community itself, towards towards the religious extremism against the Palestinian people. So we, according to this latest and developments, we are expecting more crimes to be committed, more settlements to be built, more Palestinian lands to be stolen and occupied.
Thank you very much, Muti Abu Mohsen, Palestinian political activist, joining us live from Gaza. Now, moving on to Malaysia, rival political blocs in the country are trying to woo smaller parties from a coalition government. That is after none managed a clear majority in the weekend parliamentary elections. Veteran opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim and former Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin both claim that they have the numbers to control parliament. To break this impasse, so they have been told to submit their picks for prime minister and coalition partners to the King's Palace for endorsement. The bloc led by the United Malaysian National Organization, which once dominated Malaysian politics, trailed far behind in the rest in the vote. It was their worst election performance since Malaysia's independence in the 1950s. The country has seen three governments in as many years. Incoming prime minister faces major challenges, including soaring inflation. Another minister steps down in Japan over a series of campaign funding scandals that have also led to two other resignations in less than a month. The Internal Affairs Minister has acquit over allegations of mismanagement of political funds. He had acknowledged to the parliament that his local campaign group listed a dead person as a treasurer in the annual financial statements. The development is a major blow to the prime minister after the previous resignations pushed his popularity down to just over 30%. He is now saying that he would like to apologize to the public. At least 46 people have been killed and hundreds of others injured in an earthquake that rattled Indonesia's main island of Java. Local officials say thousands of houses have been damaged. The earthquake is reported to have been 5.6 on the Richter scale. And Indonesia's meteorological agency is warning residents near the quake site to stay outside the buildings and watch out for more tremors. Indonesia experiences frequent seismic and volcanic activities due to its position on the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire, where tectonic plates are colliding. Russia accuses Ukraine of shelling the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant as 15 explosions locked the facility in 24 hours.
The Kiev regime does not stop its provocations aimed at creating the threat of a man-made catastrophe at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. On November 19th, the artillery of the armed forces of Ukraine fired 11 large-caliber artillery shells on the territory of the nuclear power plant, On the morning of November 20th, Ukrainian troops fired twice at the territory of the nuclear power plant.
The spokesman said that the missiles were fired around the power line supplying the plant. Koshenkov added that no radiation leak has been detected. Shortly after, the Ukrainian Nuclear Energy Agency said that Russia was behind the explosions. The International Atomic Energy Agency chief condemned the attacks and demanded an immediate end. Rafael Grossi called the shelling extremely disturbing. Zaporizhzhia is Europe's largest nuclear power plant. The facility has been under Russian control since March. It has come under repeated shelling, with each side blaming the other. Several members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization have been arrested in central Italy while plotting terrorist attacks against civilian and police targets. The organization is affiliated with a Ukrainian neo-Nazi parliamentary group called Azov Battalion. Max Civili reports.
Four members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization known as the Order of Hagal were arrested on Tuesday in the cities of Naples, Caserta and Avellino, about 200 kilometers south of Rome. At different phases within the process of the investigation, the police collected numerous Nazi and fascist propaganda material, bullets, weapons, tactical clothing and other elements that convinced Italy's judiciary to make charges against members of the Order of Hagal.
The police investigation was launched in 2019 when authorities suspected neo-Nazi groups plotting violent acts in Italy. Today, members of the neo-Nazi organization, the Order of Hagal, have been accused of planning to carry out terrorist attacks on civilian and police targets.
Investigative activity showed that the neo-Nazi organization placed in Italy and Nazi Ukrainian military groups, such as the Azov Battalion, Misanthropic Division and Centuria, have been in contact to conduct paramilitary training. In fact, diplomas were given for completing the training.
The Azov Battalion is a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that has been incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard and is currently fighting against Russian troops. The Order of Hagal is an organization based in the area surrounding Naples. Authorities, however, suspect that the group may have subdivisions across Italy. The Order of Hagal has established operational ties to the Azov Battalion. Besides Nazism and anti-Semitism, it promotes subversion and white supremacy culture. An additional member of the neo-Nazi Order of Hagal organization remains wanted by the Italian police, but is currently fighting Russian forces alongside the Azov Battalion. Not long ago, a high-ranking officer from the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, warned that the high availability of weapons during the current conflict in Ukraine will result in the proliferation of illicit arms in the post-conflict phase. Max Civili, Rome.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The Americans, they sent the agent whose name was Kermit Roosevelt to Iran. They had coordinated it with the English. They sent him to Iran with a suitcase full of dollars. He went to the British embassy. He coordinated it with some traitorous military personnel and a number of British-affiliated elements. They gathered up some thugs, killed the military troops, and created that disgraceful coup on the 19th of August. They also arrested Mossadegh and his entourage. Some were executed, and others were imprisoned for many years. The dispute between the Iranian nation and the United States dates back to the 19th of August. Why did you stage a coup against a national government that was elected by the people? Why did you overthrow it? You gave the oil that he, Mossadegh, had taken out of the clutches of the English to a consortium, which included England, the United States, and several other governments. So it went from the frying pan into the fire.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Our dispute with the Americans started from that day because of their interest, which was oil in those days. The Americans did not show any mercy even to a person who was trusted towards the US, and a westernized person. Mossadegh was westernized. Well, that was the beginning Now American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly saying that we support the Iranian nation. You hear these words in the news and on social media and in other places. They say we support the Iranian nation. Well, this is an extremely shameless claim. I'd like to ask the Americans the following question. Is there anything that you had the ability to do against the Iranian nation in the past 4 decades that you haven't done? Whatever they didn't do was because they weren't able to do it. It didn't benefit them. If they could, they would have done it. If it was worthwhile for them, and if they weren't afraid of the Iranian youth, they would have started a direct war, like in Iraq. But they were too afraid to do it.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
When former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the Iran deal known as the JCPOA, he also kickstarted his maximum pressure campaign. It essentially entailed exerting as much pressure on Iran through cutting it off from world trade and the global political sphere as much as possible through U.S.'s influence on world bodies, such as the United Nations and the European Union. In the archive of U.S. Department of State, you can see that the foundation of the UN was even based on consolidating U.S. power. It reads, "He, President Roosevelt, felt that this time the United States needed to play a leading role both in the creation of the organization and in the organization itself. This time refers to the post-World War II era." One odd form of influence that the U.S. has in the UN, for example, is by having essentially 3 extra votes through an agreement called the Compact of Free Association that makes Micronesia, Marshall Islands, and Palau, all of whom have permanent seats at the UN, client states that would always vote in favor of U.S. interests. Through this pull, the U.S. has managed to get these world bodies to adopt more sanctions against Iran. Even the IAEA, which has had Iran's full cooperation and transparency over the years, is taking anti-Iran stances as of recently. The U.S. has sanctioned 13 more companies this week that weren't even in Iran. According to U.S. Office of Foreign Assets Control, the aforementioned companies are accused of, quote, facilitating the sale of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Iranian petrochemicals and petroleum products to buyers in East Asia, and that they were only fronts. Since June, the U.S. has adopted 5 rounds of designations targeting Iran's petrochemical industry alone. The EU and the UK have also recently added to their sanctions list by putting the names of dozens of individuals and entities on it. A few days ago, they targeted 29 individuals and 3 entities with asset freezes and travel bans, and in October, when the first batch of new sanctions were introduced, it was 15 individuals and institutions added to the list. In a statement by Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani, He said that Europe's addiction to sanctions has deprived European parties of rationality and tactfulness, tightening the noose on its foreign relations. He further added, Iran relying on its national power and making use of its unique experiences in actively dealing with imposed challenges will take effective countermeasures against such fruitless and unconstructive measures as it did before by upholding its honor and protecting its national interest. Looking at the list of the 30 sanctions regimes that the UN has adopted since 1966, you will almost exclusively see poor African countries as well as Middle Eastern countries with very few exceptions. You will find no country in the Western Bloc. The only European country on the list is former Yugoslavia, which wasn't even considered as the West when it wasn't former Yugoslavia. This means that there has been no sin big enough on the West's record to warrant any sanctions against it. Neither the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan by US and NATO, nor the Saudi coalition's war in Yemen, nor the unwavering support of the US for Israel's decades of violating Palestinians' rights, or the Libyan coup staged by the West. And certainly not funding Persian-speaking channels to call for riots and violence in the streets of Iran, as well as platforming numerous separatist groups and organizations. The excuses found during the past weeks to exert even more pressure on Iran has been growing, from US Navy's claims that Iran was trying to smuggle 70 tons of missile fuel to Yemen, or an attack on an Israeli billionaire's oil tanker off the coast of Oman, both of which Iran rejects having a part in. The so-called world body's conduct seems to have only benefited a unipolar Western agenda, an agenda increasingly questioned and increasingly under threat. In order to keep the crumbling American hegemony, though, the US and its allies must shut down opposition through any means necessary, even if it means championing human rights and then calling for immunity for Mohammed bin Salman following revelations of his direct involvement in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Even if U.S. President formerly vowed to make Saudi Arabia pay for the crime.
In respect to the murder of Khashoggi, I raised it at the top of the meeting, making it clear what I thought of it at the time and what I think of it now. And it was exactly, I was straightforward and direct in discussing it. I made my view crystal clear. I said very straightforwardly, for an American president to be silent on an issue of human rights, is this consistent with inconsistent with who we are and who I am? I'll always stand up for our values. We are going to hold them accountable for human rights abuses.
Iran is an obstacle in the way of U.S. hegemony and domination in the region. The failed maximum pressure campaign is America's attempt at clutching to its imperialist adventures. How long will it be able to keep up the act, however, is the question.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided the fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, US media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number. But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, okay, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Iran has witnessed another deadly terrorist attack. The latest deadly incident happened in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces, killing several people, including a child and an elderly woman. The terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the assault. President Ebrahim Raisi has condoled with the families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all terrorists behind the attack. A senior judicial official says three people who were behind the brutal attack were arrested. A special operation is going on to identify and to bring to justice other people involved in the attack in the city of Izeh. Separately, a religious seminary school in the Izeh city was set ablaze by a group of rioters. No one was injured in that incident.
Separately, three people were killed and eight security forces injured during riots in Semirom in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. Two security forces also killed and two others wounded in the city of Malik Shahr in Isfahan province.
Last month, a terrorist attack happened in the city of Shiraz. On October 26, a terrorist attacked the popular Shia shrine of Shah Cheragh in Iran's southwestern province of Fars, killing over a dozen people. That attack was claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. The attacks come amid ongoing foreign-backed riots that have hit various Iranian provinces after a 22-year-old Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini died in the hospital despite intensive medical care and resuscitation efforts. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Iran says the attacks are part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says security services, the Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians are conspiring to trigger a civil war in Iran to destroy and to disintegrate the country.
He warned them that Iran is not Libya or Sudan. He also noted that the enemies are targeting Iran's territorial integrity and identity, saying that Iran will not allow anyone to jeopardize national security. The terrorist attack comes amid Western attempts to stoke unrest in Iran and to create more economic hardships for the Iranian people. Late last month, Iran's main intelligence bodies reported that the U.S., backed by the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other allies, are devising a multidimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the U.S., Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that, through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you. We will crush you. You will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
United States should take history as a mirror and let it guide the future. That's what the Chinese President Xi Jinping told his American counterpart Joe Biden on the sidelines of the Group of 20 summit in Bali, Indonesia.
As always, I'm ready to have a candid and in-depth exchange of views with Mr. President on issues of strategic importance in China-U.S. relations and major global and regional issues at our meeting today. I also look forward to working with you to bring China-U.S. relations back to the track of healthy and stable development.
We share a responsibility, in my view, to show that China and the United States can manage our differences, prevent competition from becoming anything ever near conflict, and to find ways to work together on urgent global issues that require our mutual cooperation.
The two held their first ever in-person meeting as relations between Washington and Beijing are at their lowest in decades, marred by disagreements over a host of issues from Taiwan to trade. During the landmark three-hour meeting, the Chinese president warned his U.S. counterpart not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral relations. Biden, for his part, said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Biden said he sought to assure Xi that U.S. policy on Taiwan has not changed, seeking to lower tensions over the self-ruled island.
And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy on Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved.
On North Korea, Biden told Xi that Beijing has an obligation to attempt to talk Pyongyang out of conducting a seventh nuclear test. U.S.-China relations have been strained in recent years by growing tensions over issues ranging from Taiwan to the South China Sea, trade practices, and U.S. restrictions on Chinese technology. Regarding Taiwan, Beijing says it's a matter for the Chinese and China's internal affair. Anyone that seeks to split Taiwan from China will be violating the fundamental interests of the Chinese nation. Tensions over the self-ruled island have intensified following a provocative visit there in August by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The move prompted large-scale Chinese military drills around the island territory, as well as a declaration by the U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. Beijing has time and again slammed U.S. provocations, including encouraging and supporting pro-separatist independence forces on the island, saying that Washington has no right to interfere in how to resolve the Taiwan issue. Also, Biden dropped the hammer on China's semiconductor industry by fully implementing a slew of tough controls on the export of American chip technology to China. It would also undermine China's ability to import, manufacture, and export the semiconductors that run the world. The goal was to slow down and prevent Chinese military and technological advances. Washington also takes sides with Beijing's rivals in a maritime dispute in the South China Sea by routinely sending warships and warplanes to the waters to assert what it calls its right to freedom of navigation. China has repeatedly called on Washington to stop the provocative actions, which undermine peace and stability in the strategic waters. Last month, the White House and the Pentagon declared Beijing as Washington's most serious strategic competitor, in reports outlining U.S. defense and foreign policy strategies. Therefore, despite Biden's meeting with Xi, can the two manage their differences to prevent conflict, or is it inevitable that the two are on the collision course?
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. What can be a better source of pride than that the U.S. government, with all its war equipment and military might, boastfulness claims allies among puppet regime, all the wealth it has stolen from the oppressed countries of the world and control over mass media has become so disgraced. It is helpless to face the brave nation of Iran, the hand of the Savior, may God hasten his glad advent. The U.S. has become so desperate that it does not know to which way and to whom to turn. This is not but with assistance of Almighty Allah, who has awakened all nations.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the mosque. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini has mentioned that, O nation, preserve your own mosques. O intellectuals, preserve the mosques. Do not be like the Western intellectuals. Lawyers, preserve the mosques. In this part of his speech, obviously, Imam Khomeini is talking to the nation, and then he referred to a specific group in the nation as the intellectuals, and then to the lawyers. What he wants to say is that, look, the West has given an idea that you need to think about your individual life only.
There is no social life. You need to think about yourself. You need to earn for yourself. You need to make your own life happy and ignore the others. The idea behind the capitalism is that you earn for yourself, you make profit for yourself and not the others. Therefore, Imam Khomeini is telling that, look, in Islam, this is not the case. In Islam, mosque has said to us, it teaches us that when we look in the mosque, people praying together, they are intellectuals, they are lawyers, they are politicians, they are maybe needy people, they are students, they are kids, young, old. All of them are standing in one line, and therefore they are giving the message that we are one nation, we are one. We take care of each other, we care about each other. It is not like secular system, it is not like West. The Western intellectuals are injecting in the minds of the people that religion is different from the politics, religion is different from the economics, religion is different from the other aspects of the life. But Islam says no, the politics, economics, and all those things, they are within the religion, and religion has everything within it. Therefore, Imam Khomeini says that preserve the mosques. Because when you go to the mosque, when you pray with others, it means that this is the place to preserve your identity. And our identity is being the servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Where Allah wants us to serve Him, where He wants us to work, there we working. Now today someone is working as an intellectual, another is working as a lawyer, another is working as a politician. They all are working in the society in order to make this society a pure society and a just society. Therefore, all these things can be done when we are connected to the mosque, and through mosque we are connected to each other, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say la ilaha illa.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, turning to Russia and Iran to meet the country's burgeoning energy needs. And we shall also examine Pakistan expressing its interest to seek energy supplies from Russia, following in the footsteps of India in defiance of Western sanctions.
In the wake of burgeoning demand for oil and gas, India is looking for all potential suppliers worldwide who could meet its energy needs. Russia and Iran are the two energy-rich countries New Delhi is wooing to keep its crude supply flowing. Following the recent OPEC oil quota cuts, India has ramped up its oil imports from Russia in defiance of U.S. pressure. Experts believe India's partnership with Moscow is likely to deepen further, with little support coming from the West.
Amid the unprecedented energy crisis gripping the world, triggered by the Ukraine war, as well as recent oil cuts by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, increasingly turning to Russia as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran to meet the country's energy needs.
Let's make no mistake.
In October, India announced its decision to speed up the diversification of oil imports, with Oil Minister Hardeep Puri saying that OPEC oil cuts would hurt importers like India.
Energy order has to change because of the severe crisis at the moment. And Russia has also need to export their oil, and they need a certain market where its oil can be and gas can be exported to. So India is taking advantage of it because of the Ukraine war and the heavy sanctions on Russia. Russia cannot export its oil and gas to Europe because they have stopped their previous payments. So Russia is also looking for some market, and besides India being a huge population, a country of huge population, they also looking forward to ensure their energy security.
To mitigate the potential risk, India has reportedly turned to Iran as one of its potential suppliers, apart from their common all-weather ally, Russia. The newly appointed Iranian ambassador to New Delhi, Iraj Elohi, expressed his country's willingness to provide low-cost crude to India to ensure the country's energy security. According to reliable sources, the two sides have already set the process rolling. Pertinently, Iran was one of the leading oil suppliers to India before the United States imposed sanctions on Iran's energy sector in 2018. The good news for India is that the U.S. government appears reluctant to sanction India's oil imports from either Russia or Iran amid the global energy crisis. On the other hand, Iran has significantly ramped up its crude exports, defying sanctions.
Our strategic collaboration that would play a significant role. But Iran has to be very careful, like when coming up in like more bilateral, more friendly bilateral relations with other countries, because there are some conflict of interest as well. But after Chabahar collaboration, I believe Iran is also looking for some consumer markets, because it has to survive economically and to improve its trade links. And so far, if they are also find some market in India for their oil and other goods, that is really good for Iran.
More worrying for the West is India's growing energy partnership with Russia, which has in recent months become one of New Delhi's top oil suppliers, especially after the European countries turned away from Moscow over its military operation in Ukraine. The low-cost crude offered by Russia seems too irresistible for India. In October, India's oil imports from Russia continued to surge, a clear indication that New Delhi has prioritized its energy security in the face of Western pressure.
India's import of Russian oil continued to mount in October, making Russia the biggest supplier to the energy-dependent South Asian country. According to energy cargo tractor Vortexa, Moscow supplied 935,556 barrels of crude oil per day to India in October. Russia now